Say why?
Your hair is crazy, too. I wish I had a mohawk.
It wasn't my idea, I told her. Where's Liz?
Oliver!
Come sit down.
I left her standing there and joined Mom on the couch in front of the massive cardboard widescreen television.
You had better watch out, Mom said, raising an eyebrow at Michaela.
What? Why?
How are you liking your party?
It's awesome, Mom. Thank you. Was it your idea?
She smiled.
Nope. It was all Liz. But you know, I wish I could really give you this.
You give me enough, Mom.
I tried to laugh.
I'm sorry I took all this away from you.
Upshot.
I mean it, Mom. Sometimes I feel like, I mean,
no humidifiers for either of us.
Meh. I never owned one anyhow.
She paused. But I do have to admit something.
What?
Was she about to tell me something about my birth? An untold story about Dad and Auburn Stash? About the mysterious laboratory?
I do miss shitcoms sometimes.
I sighed.
Yeah, sorry about that. Let's see what's on TV, hey?
She handed me a plastic remote devoid of batteries.
Press the on button.
Won't that shatter the illusion?
I wiggled my fingers.
When it doesn't switch on, I mean?
Just do it,
came the muffled voice of Auburn Stash from the direction of the television. The tent canvas was trembling there.
Sure, possessed cardboard television set. Why not?
Wait, first ask what we're watching.
Liz's voice.
What are we watching?
I cried.
A live concert, Mom said.
I pressed the little red on button. Someone popped the front of the box out, and who should be sitting there but Auburn Stash holding a harmonica? Squeezed in beside him and leaning on the frame of the screen was Liz with a toy microphone.
Welcome to the inaugural Oliver Ages Hoopla, said Liz. I'm your announcer, awesome person. Please welcome the talented Lady Paulo to the stage.
Mom stood up and left the tent, bowing at the whooping, slightly buzzed crowd of the Fay and Becker families. Moments later, I saw her edging into the screen from behind, holding an acoustic guitar. I laughed.
You play the guitar?
I birthed you. I can do anything. I knew there was a guitar in the house, tucked away under Mom's bed. I'd never seen her play it.
Pay good attention, kiddo, said Auburn Stash.
We went to all this expense, and you're zoning out.
Auburn Stash, you're a harmonicist?
Nope, never. But you don't know any better, yes?
Liz snorted.
It's your first live show, up and free, so deal with it.
She counted them off. They began to play. I dealt with it, more or less, although my eyes kept welling up for some stupid reason, and my nose got runny. I couldn't tell you what they played. They're in my makeshift living room. They played folk songs, rock songs, songs I'd never hear otherwise, songs that weren't ideal for glocking to. Liz wasn't much of a singer. She may have been a bit tone-deaf, even, but that didn't matter. The crowd of partygoers gathered around, holding bowls of popcorn and singing along as if they'd heard the songs their whole lives. They probably had. And today, I could pretend that I had to. Eventually, Liz stopped screeching long enough to say,
We now interrupt our programming to bring you a message from our sponsors.
At which point, Michaela pushed her way on screen and advertised Red Pop by chugging an entire can of it. Liz shoved Michaela away again and leaned out of the TV, extending a hand toward me. I reached out to take it, but instead she passed me something. Not a paper airplane, Moritz. It was that book light again. And I didn't feel a thing but the warmth of her palm, even though it was glowing white. I slipped it into my pocket. The buzz of it there no longer made me queasy. If anything, it seemed to charge me up, wake me up, fill my bones with the same glow Liz had. As night fell, Junkyard Joe demanded we all pop a squat on some of the busted old cars and wait for some sort of grand finale. Liz was off helping him get something ready, so I leaned against an old Dodge truck beside Auburn Stash. You would have loved this night, Moritz. Everyone was being so noisy, so rambunctious.
What do you think of your dream life, Oliver?
For some reason, he spoke carefully.
I think it's the coolest thing anyone's ever done for me. You do seem to be enjoying yourself. I am happy to see you looking so well.
Hey, I always pass my health checks.
There are different kinds of wellness, kiddo.
I noticed that his goatee was streaked with strands of white, and some of the crinkles around his eyes weren't from smiling.
How about you?
What about me?
Well, how's your wellness?
Why bother about me when that young lady is waiting for you to join her?
Good point, Stash, and you can join Mom.
I nodded to where she was standing on the other side of a bonfire.
She really cares about you, you know, even if she hollers. Don't just loiter on your lonesome.
You're your father's son.
I am?
Was my needling finally paying off? But right then, Liz ran forward and grabbed my hand.
Come on, come on.
I thought she'd drag me to the ghetto-mobile, but she dragged me instead to the empty, pseudo-living room, and we sat on the couch. A rip in the canvas overhead gave us a view of the sky. We began counting down. Before long, the fireworks started. I had never seen those before, either. Junkyard Joe got them illegally somewhere. When I asked him about it later, he just tapped his nose all mischievously.
Hey, what do you see when you look at fireworks, Moritz?
I bet you can see them a little bit, since they're so loud.
Or do you see the smoke, the ash, the gray debris?
As amazing as they were, I stopped looking pretty fast. I couldn't get over sitting in that homemade living room.
What's up, Ollie?
This is just too... Look, I never thought I could have all these things, even for pretend. I didn't bother dreaming of it, you know?
In the sky overhead, the fireworks crackled and burst.
Liz's face was lit in purple and pink flashes, like she was sunbathing in electricity. But there was no pressure at my temples. Only her, looking at me.
You're being too honest again.
No, because I'm lying. I did bother dreaming about it. I do dream about it, all the freaking time.
Liz was never as quiet as she was in that mock living room.
Then,
I dream about that too, Ollie. All the freaking time.
She laid her head on my shoulder.
So I guess that was the moment,
the final moment that sealed it for me.
It's really cold in my room still, and my fingers are numb. I'm not ready to write about the terrible things that happened yet. Next time, I guess. I can't stall forever.
It's been eating me up. Maybe that's why I'm losing weight, and it has nothing to do with not having tuna sandwiches.
I look forward to your letter, Mo.
I want to postpone my next view.
Ollie.
P.S. I still can't shake that weird notion. I mean, maybe my dad didn't die, and your mom didn't either. Maybe our parents are actually, well, our parents. And maybe that's why I get you and you get me. Wouldn't that be wondrous?
Bro?
Chapter 16. The Outfit. How can I express my growing concern? You wanted to share your story with me, but if doing so will be detrimental to your health, stop it now, Ollie. Do you remember when you first began writing me? You used to babble. You used to be curious. Used to wonder. Ask me any number of frivolous questions about television and the internet. My thoughts on cartoons. You asked about my personal life. Nudged and pestered and needled. I thought that if ever I met you, I'd want to smack you in the face with an electronic device. Perhaps a video game console. To hush you and your illumination. That was you. That was the same Ollie who was impossible to ignore. Who took me, for once, out of myself. The first one to make me smile in... I shiver to think how long. I shudder to recall the afternoons before I could await your letters. The afternoons spent in this dank apartment we struggled to pay for. Above this city of people who could not care less whether or not I listened to them before you began writing to me. Before you. I can no longer ignore that you haven't seen the sun. You? The boy who used to climb trees and run away from home? You can't get out of bed? And now you write your story as if into emptiness? I am here. I am not a void, Ollie. I am reading. I can't take you from dark places, but I am listening. If writing your biography is sinking you, stop writing. I would rather you told me about the humidity's effects on your glockenspiel, or the birds outside your window, the fibers in your t-shirt, the wrinkles in your face. Rather that than write a history that racks you with pain and guilt. You speak of the best day of your life as if you don't anticipate ever having another good one. Your fondest memory is of being shoved into a cheap imitation of things you can never have. Why weren't you insulted by Liz's display? That party was a mockery. The living room you could never live in? Why would anyone want to show you what others find necessary to life? Why would anyone want to change you, to correct you like that? Why not celebrate what you do love? What you have accomplished? Your glockenspieling, your calligraphy, your burgeoning origami skills, your storytelling. Why not celebrate that you are a wonderful, funny, irritating, talented young man anyone would be gratified to know? Someone I would die to meet. I am not kicking you while you are down, Ollie. I am telling you to celebrate what is real in your life. Celebrate who you are, not who Liz wishes you to be. Claw your way out of this nostalgic hole you are digging. Get out of bed. For the last time, abandon the idea that we might be blood relatives. Nonsense. I spent a lot of time with my mother, even if I never understood her. My birth father was nobody, nothing more than the person who impregnated my mother. He made a bastard and vanished. There is no sense in romanticizing it. Herr Faber is my father now. There is no sense in seeking the past. The past is never any better than the present, and it is not what you have to look forward to. We don't have to be related in order to be close. Sometimes you are not as amusing as you think you are. Sometimes I think you are a child, Oliver. Perhaps I should be kinder to you in your sadness. But nothing makes me so angry as the idea that you are letting yourself wither away for the sake of a girl who does not appreciate you. I will imagine that you asked about me in your last letter. Wrote a passage such as this. I hope you enjoy your totally wacky trip to the discotheque with Fika. I think you made her swoon with your amazing rapping skills. It sounds like she might maybe somehow be the right kind of girl to whip your goofy, pompous head into the proper shape. You realize this trip is probably a date, don't you? How kind of you to ask. I don't know how to dress for a discotheque in general, let alone how to dress when meeting a boy under strange circumstances at a discotheque. Under the watchful eye of his imposing sister, and her equally imposing boots. "Who gives a crap how you dress?" Fika said. "You're still pretending to be blind, right? Wear a fluffing tutu. It's not like you usually dress well anyhow." "Beg pardon?" "Well, you're colorblind. It shows. Puce pants and a mustard yellow shirt. Please, Moritz, have you ever considered that people don't avoid you just because of your goggles?" It was the weekend. We were at the Kneipe again. I am half convinced Fika lives there. The only time she doesn't look irritated is when she is listening to the local performers reading their poetry, singing their songs, performing their irksome scatting. That's the only time she doesn't jingle and spit. She is quiet then, apart from the slight wheeze in her chest. She accompanies me home some evenings, however, so she must not live there. We both live in Ostsee. The watchful eye she's been keeping on me is peculiar. She must not entirely hate my company. I would say we were friends. She would snort derisively and stomp away from me if I said anything of the sort. Well, won't you help me pick something out? Something that isn't a tutu? No, I didn't even dress my Barbies as a kid. Your Barbies were nude? I tattooed them with permanent markers. They weren't nude, they were art. That was unhelpful. I resigned myself to asking Frau Pruitt for her advice. Pruitt seemed intent on actually giving me work to do in the library, now that I could read all the book titles. What can you tell me about the customs of discotheque attire? I hazarded. I can tell you that it's irrelevant to alphabetizing self-help guides, Moritz. Ah. She sniffed down at me from up on the footstool. Did someone ask you to go? Not precisely, but... Well, don't let your newfound love life interfere with your studies. She climbed down, shoved the step over 1 meter. Why should my studies matter here? It's Bernholt Regan. They matter if you ever wanted to get out of here. I had no intention of asking Frau Mellmann. I recalled your tale of dressing for Liz. There are no fedoras in my house. Father owns only 2 ties. Usually he wears his workman's clothes, suitable for welding. Although I have heard that some discotheque in favor industrial music, I doubt I could pull off a full-body jumpsuit, even if it was color-coordinated. I decided to match Vika. Yesterday I purchased an outfit from the second-hand shop. The sales clerk assured me it was entirely black. Black pants, black shirt, black boots for the rain. I hope that will suffice. Gott in Himmel, I am uneasy. And not only because of the discotheque. Lenz Monk returned to school this week, and some part of my heart, perhaps in the weak left ventricle, I had prayed he would not be returning to Bernholt Regan at all. But this morning in the courtyard I sensed him there, clearly visible in the resounding waves of the rainfall. He cracked his knuckles. I could hear it from meters away. He quieted when I passed. His eyes followed me all the way into the school. The stare of someone who would not hesitate to shove me off a bridge, would not hesitate to pummel a boy as small as Owen into nothingness. Would the threat of expulsion spare me his attentions? Vika said his father held some sort of sway. Lenz's father and Headmaster Haydn were old friends, or so she'd heard. That was why Lenz was not locked away in a juvenile detention center. I broke into the iciest of sweats once inside. My pacemaker labored. My chest twinged. I nearly shrieked when Fika leapt down from the banister in front of me. You look uglier than usual. Lenz has returned. Nothing's going to happen, pussycat. Because of the school assembly. She sighed. Tobacco breath wafted into my nostrils. Because I won't let him fluffing touch anyone here. He won't hurt anyone again. Did he hurt you as well, Fika? It took half a glare to silence me. Last Friday, while I was fulfilling my duties in the bibliotheque, Frau Pruitt handed me a many-paged stapled document. Must I read this? I clicked in apprehension. You don't have to, but you'd be a fool not to. I listened well. Application for gymnasium transfer. Wait, she nodded. But it can't be allowed. And why not? You accepted no accommodations for your visual impairment during the placement assessment, correct? That's not why I failed. I didn't even take the test. And why not, Moritz? I took a deep breath, only to bite my tongue. The timing was terrible. There were other distractions, and... Nice schools are for nicer people, Oliver. But you're willing to transfer now that your head's on straight, yes? Of course, her eyebrows slipped upward. I stared at the books lining the shelves on either side of us. Books I once thought I could never read. Until I spent time in the bibliotheque, books were something I had never considered myself worthy of enjoying. Being who and what I am, coming from the place I came from. There are many things I never allowed myself, Ollie. But you've told me to be brave. Yes, I said. Yes, I am willing. Good, because I told them that you didn't apply because you were disgruntled by their lack of accommodations. But, she raised a hand. I winced. She rested it on my shoulder. You belong in a slightly classier hellhole than this. Fill out the forms. Show up for the test. I'll need references. You've got them. Fear not. Herr Haydn still owes me for the dinner party fiasco of 2011, and I happen to know something nefarious about Frau Mellmann and her online gambling. I had to clear my throat. Thank you. I don't want your thanks. I want you to read War and Peace. Every last word. Right. For a brief instant, that application was the best thing I'd ever read, Oliver. Even better than The Catcher in the Rye. Even better than Fahrenheit 451. I cannot speak for fireworks. Rain increases my vision more than you can imagine, in concentric rings of sound. But snow is silent, difficult for me to see at all. Yet I can always feel it on my nose and cheeks. It is cold but soft. To me it smells like salt. Understand that even when I lecture you, even when I am cold, I am trying to be soft as well. I should write more, but it is Friday at last. Fika is knocking her fists against the door of my apartment, scaring the living organs out of father. I have some sense of what you felt when Liz came to your door. Fika is more likely to be caked in cigarette smoke than muck. But she is another person who makes me human. You were first, Ollie. I wish I could phone you. I'm not teasing you for what you cannot have. I'm trying to express my deepening concern. Anxiously yours, Moritz.
Chapter 17. The Fence. I don't even know what you want from me anymore. First, we agree to be honest with each other and ourselves or whatever, and then you tell me not to tell you things that will be upsetting. Well, guess what? Sometimes things are really damn upsetting. Make up your mind. You told me not to pretend to be happy. It's not like I've stopped wondering about you, you know. You wanted me to stop asking about you. I can't believe you never told me about your parents. All I know about my dad is that he was a nice guy and a scientist, and my mom is either smiling or crying whenever she thinks about him, but I still talk about him sometimes. But I didn't even realize that you were adopted, so can you blame me for filling in the blanks myself? Would being my brother really be so terrible? But that's not why I'm angry. Why'd you spit all over the best memory I have? You're so determined to think the worst of Liz. Didn't I tell you that she didn't do anything wrong? Maybe I should wait to write this. Maybe I should wait until Auburn's stash drags Mom out of the garage for the first time in a week. But now I've got a pen, and now I've got time. I've always got time, right? I don't go on adventures to discotheques. So I'm writing anyhow. Because you're wrong. I need to talk to you about this, even if it hurts. I don't think I can handle it on my own anymore. Sometimes I stare at the window and I punch the wall and I pinch the skin at my wrists and it doesn't feel like anything. Even if you are an abyss that can't make its mind up, even if you think I don't give a shit about you anymore. Hit yourself, damn it. I'm going to tell you, finally, why Liz won't come to visit me. It started with a camping trip. It happened around a year after that 13th birthday party, a few months before I started talking to you, but who's counting? Junkyard Joe had a deer blind, sort of like a treehouse for game hunters, a few miles into the forest, near Morrow Lake. The weekend of my 14th birthday was a good time to set up his gear for the upcoming hunting season, which begins in November. Besides, he just about spit out his beer when I told him I had never actually seen the lake in our woods, the lake that borders the forest and constitutes the state park.
You ain't seen Marl?
Well, it's just a lot of water, right? I've seen water before.
Jeegus, boy.
When Liz asked me to come along, we were in my bedroom, passing the book light back and forth. I don't know if Mom would like it. A few days isn't the same as a few hours. I tossed the light back to her before my hands went numb. Liz caught it. She had cut her hair short the previous month, after she started high school, and it bobbed when she swung her arms out.
Just tell her you're staying at the junkyard again, camping in the ghetto-mobile, like old times.
Why don't we do that anymore? I was only half-joking.
We might be too old for the ghetto-mobile.
Blasphemy! I snickered and caught the light again, but it wasn't my hands that were aching this time. Things were getting weird between us. Liz still came over all the time, but we didn't seem to laugh as much. Sometimes we'd both go quiet, and it got really hard to look her in the eyes without coughing on those imaginary frog bits again. Why don't you ask Tommy and Michaela to come too? She looked at her feet. I'm sure they're busy with other things. I nearly dropped the light. So you only asked me? She nodded. Didn't say anything snarky, just nodded and held out her hands to catch the light again. I tossed it back, and I felt like it weighed more all of a sudden. Well, yeah, I'll come, I said. Sounds like shenanigans. She smirked. Some of the aching went away. Maybe I was imagining it to begin with. Maybe Liz asked me not as a last resort, but as something else. Maybe it was a good thing that things were changing.
Yeah.
We left early on a Thursday morning. We'd packed up some basic camping gear, two tents and hiking backpacks full of venison jerky and s'more-making materials, as well as a cooler full of hot dogs to eat that evening. Junkyard Joe's backpack was this giant green lump of, well, junk. Cooking utensils like tongs and pokers dangled from his back. Rope was all but wrapped around his neck.
Shame we can't bring a fridge with us, he said as we laced up our boots. Keep the drinks cold.
My bad, I mumbled. Liz rolled her eyes. I don't know about you guys, but I wouldn't want to strap a fridge to my back anyhow. Joe grinned, revealing more gaps than teeth.
You ain't wrong, Beth. You sure ain't wrong.
It took us ages to get our act together enough to set out. After a few hours of scrabbling around looking for stray socks and pie pans, we were finally trudging out into a warm October afternoon. The leaves underfoot were hardly damp at all, and crunched enough to be satisfying. The air had that awesome scent of decay. If only all dead things smelled like musty autumn.
So you brought an oil lantern, right?
Liz asked me.
Yes, yes.
It's tucked alongside my monocle and collapsible velocipede, Jekyll.
Oh, ha, ha, hide. I don't care if we're living in the past, so long as you don't expect me to manage without toilet paper. I'm a modern lady.
For some reason, I did not laugh. I blushed and dragged my feet.
You kids, said Joe from behind us. Wait up for your pack horse.
I can carry more.
Shut your yap, birthday boy, and keep marching. Who wants to sing the first camp song?
Oh, man, we have to go back. You need Glock accompaniment. Liz prodded me in the back.
Don't encourage him, Ollie.
And balance was restored. Why was it suddenly hard to be ourselves? After an hour of hiking, we arrived at the fence that surrounds Mom's property. I'd never actually seen the fence before, though I'd known it existed. I stopped walking the moment I sensed it. A twinge in my temples. A blade in my nostrils. Pick it up, Slowpoke. Ollie?
I blinked.
This? Your nose is bleeding. What is this?
Up ahead, I could see a band of tangerine light bulging and shrinking in orange humps, not dissimilar to the tendrils of the power line. But these strings of electricity were a bit narrower, and they rose and fell in pulses, like looping vines jutting from the ferns at waist level, almost like loose stitches in fabric. When they were present, they were downright intimidating. The orange strands outlined the entire length of the horizon, visible as far left and as far right as I could see, spitting and retreating between the branches and the trees. There was no way around it. It felt like I was reddening, like I was sunburnt from head to toe in an instant. My head felt like two heads, three, splitting in all directions. I gritted my teeth before speaking. There's something. I need to sit down. Mind if I pop a squat? And my legs folded under me. Good thing I have experience with collapsing, or I might have smacked my head.
Ollie!
God, I hated seeing her look like that, like she didn't know what to do with me. Like I wasn't even a salamander she could study.
Whoa there! What's up with your boy?
Did you bring your damn walkie-talkies, Uncle Joe?
Heh, walkies. My speech was slurred, tongue-heavy. Walkies-talkies. I could feel the beginnings of the pre-seizure aura fogging up my vision. I thought I could smell cinnamon, which is something that sometimes happens beforehand. At least it isn't sulfur for me.
Hell, he's having a reaction?
I decided at that moment to put all my fingers in my mouth.
No, he always tries to cannibalize himself. Yes, he's having a reaction. What's causing it?
Well, obviously, it's the property line.
Liz was pulling me to my feet, yanking me back the way we'd come. I was biting my lip, trying to stall the seizure that was creeping into me as she dragged me away.
His family property line. It's an electric fence, like most folks put up to keep deer out of gardens. Didn't you know?
The sudden chill in my chest helped clear my head. I tried to take some of my weight off Liz's shoulders.
She put up an electric fence? I said. But she promised him.
What?
I felt like something from a zoo, Mo.
She promised my dad. She tries to keep me at home, but one day, let me leave. So why? Ollie, maybe we should go camping at the Getamobile after all.
That look was still on her face. I could see it clearly now that I had one head again.
Or a little ways back, even. I mean, the lake's just water, like you said.
Yeah, I suppose s'mores would taste just as good there. I can check on the site next week instead,
Joe added.
No. No, I want to see the water. The lake of water.
I shook off Liz's grasp.
I can ask Mom about it later. I can needle later. But you can't cross it. It's pulsing. I can try.
But even as I spoke, even as I strode forward, Moritz, my vision was getting cloudy. I know I told you that we should aim for superheroism, but maybe you're right. Maybe we have to aim for normalcy first. Too bad normalcy is an impossible thing.
Sheesh, you kids are dramatic.
Joe was peeling his hiking boots and socks from his feet. He dumped his massive backpack into my arms, and I nearly fell over again.
Let me deal with this, eh? Hold my purse, Barbara Streisand.
Who?
An actress. I'm saying you're a dramatic woman.
And here's what Junkyard Joe did. He strolled, barefoot, right up to the single electrified wire buried in the light, right into what I could only see as swooping arcs of orange, could feel as sizzling warmth, on my neck and ears especially, and slammed a boot down on top of it, pinning it to the leafy ground. He wedged the other one beside it lengthwise so that the electric current was entirely blocked. The pressure lessened at my temples. Half the fence went out. On the left, the pulses kept bursting out, but beyond the boot, to the right, the fence was no more than a silver wire, suspended almost invisibly in the air at waist height. I wondered if that silver wire wound entirely around the property. I wondered whether she would have put one around our house if she thought that would keep me in better than the padlocks. Placing a hand on the toe of one boot,
Joe pressed the wire into the leaves on the muted side.
How's it looking, Oliver? Rubber boots. They don't conduct electricity.
It's genius, Joe. You made a gate for me.
Why does everyone assume that all rednecks are idiots?
Maybe it's the inbreeding. I tried to smile. Hey, I'm the one who makes the inbreeding jokes, Amish, said Liz. But I didn't want to look at her.
Don't thank me, Streisand. Joe reclaimed his pack. Just hurry up and get to leaping.
I turned and eyed the tendrils still dancing on the left side of the boots. Ready or not, here I come. I sprinted forward. I leapt the wire near the low part where he had pinned it down. For the briefest moment while I was in the air, I thought I felt those tendrils bowing out sideways to net me. But I was already past them. I landed in the leaves beyond the electric fence, and in doing so left my family property for the first time in a decade or longer. The air was fine, but I wondered whether the air back home wasn't as fresh. I looked back. Joe was giving me a dorky thumbs up and grin, but Liz watched me from a distance. Not far beyond the fence, the forest switched from new growth to old growth. Suddenly the trees were towering beasts, century-old pines and beeches that loomed overhead like dinosaurs. The forest paths below became clearer but darker. The foliage overhead was thick enough to block the light and discourage even ferns from growing at the foot of the trees. I can't believe I've never seen this before. I was leaning back so far that I thought my head would scrape the ground. Joe was leading the way. Liz lagged behind us. I could feel her eyes on my back.
Well, now you have. And wait till we get to the lake. You almost always see deer drinking along the east side, so long as fudgies haven't spooked them all.
Fudgies?
Tourists. Flatlanders. They come north for the trees and the chocolate fudge.
I leapt a puddle in his wake. The ground was moister here, a bit colder. I've never had fudge.
How on earth do you live?
I wonder about that too, said Liz quietly. This wasn't nearly as fun as my last birthday, Mo. Joe scratched his chin.
Well, it's October, so there shouldn't be too many tourists around, apart from a few prospective game hunters like myself. But they tend to stay near the plains on the east banks. Just how sensitive are you, Ollie? Will you start twitching and biting your toes if they've got their RVs parked along the opposite side of the lake?
No, I don't think so. I'll be able to see the electricity from pretty far away, and I should be able to tell how strong it is. Whether it's just a phone or a mini-fridge or a car or whatever, don't worry about me.
So, you're almost psychic? You can tell what sort of electrical object it is from far away? Get out of town!
I've never been to town. And I never... I mean, no. I don't think of it that way. It's really mostly useless. Stop stuttering, you idiot! Nobody thinks you're weird anymore. You're old news. I did not know whether Liz was joking with this little outburst, but at least she was talking, walking abreast with us. I'm old hat, huh? The oldest hat. Like bowler hats, Dickens. Like Grecian diadems, Homer. Like Egyptian headdresses, Ra. Whatever, dork. But her lips curled upward, and before long she was far ahead of us, hopping over puddles, cheeks flushed pink. When she was very nearly out of sight, Joe inched closer.
Hey, I think this weekend's your shot, buddy. Go for it. I give you permission. Heh.
I felt the blood rush to my face.
I don't know what you... Oh, come on. You're a hermit, yes, but you're also a teenage boy and she's a beautiful girl, my niece. Some people don't appreciate that, maybe. But don't tell me you ain't got your hopes up.
I wouldn't even... I don't even know...
You'll get your chance, Ollie. I'll be sure to wander off at the perfect moment. Probably sometime this evening, after we set up camp. I'll give you a signal, right? You'll know it when you see it.
I waved my hands. No, please, don't.
What are you so afraid of, Oliver?
I stopped walking. The wind blew the scent of pine up my nose, twigs against my ankles. I looked at the lantern dangling from the side of my backpack. Why would someone like Liz want anything like that from someone like me?
'cause you have the decency to even wonder about that, you idiot. Now let's catch up. She's probably halfway to China by now.'
But she was only several yards ahead, hiding behind low pine boughs. 'Boo!' she cried, leaping out in front of us, kicking up the leaves.
'Goram, girl!'
Joe clutched his chest. 'How old are you?' I worried she'd overheard us. I thought she was blushing, but that could have been the October air nipping her. She was laughing breezes. And then I was, too. And so was he.
'I want to get there before sunset. Come on.'
We spotted Morrow Lake in the late afternoon. We could see it sparkling up ahead from between the trees. More than that, we could smell it, taste it in the way the air grew soggier. I was glad that it was autumn, or else the mosquitoes would have been sucking us something awful. Finally, we stepped out of the forest and almost right into the dark water. I could see pines lining the opposite bank a few hundred yards away. The sun was rippling along the soft black waves, and skippers darted across the surface of the water by the shore. Frogs were rustling along grass. We stepped onto moist ground that gave beneath our feet.
'Wow,' I said. 'That is slightly better than your average puddle.'
'A little bigger,' said Liz. 'Nice to know there are bigger things in the world.'
'You think it's pretty now? Just wait until sunset.'
And then he did something terrible, Junkyard Joe.
'Yeah, sunset!'
he shouted, giving me two thumbs up and heartily winking.
'That's when I'll be at the deer blind, don't you know? At sunset.'
My uncle's a crackpot, said Liz.
Before we made camp, Joe led us north along a thin trail through the cattails beside the lakeside, and then into the woods a little ways to point out his deer blind. It was essentially a large green tree fort, decked out in camouflage flock and layered in plastic tarps for the off-season. We clambered up the wooden ladder behind him. He had a cozy setup in there, with a couple of chairs and space for a sleeping bag, although he was right about needing to patch it up a bit. Water had been leaking through and rotting the plywood by the ladder. The floor was coated in pine needles and leaves, and a robin had left the debris of a nest in an upper corner of the wall. We got a good sense of why he was so proud of the blind. The vantage point from up there was vast. We could see the lakeshore, where deer were likely to drink, and the long grass, where they were likely to graze. We set up the tents a little ways away from the water and the blind, on the most level ground we could find and not too close to the lake. We didn't want to get flooded out if it rained. Joe had been right about other campers. I could see a faint electric haze. The smog made it look like three large vehicles at least across the water. But we were far enough away that I wasn't worried. It took some time to sort out the tent poles and dig a pit for the campfire and gather kindling. It was my job to dig two holes far away from camp, one for doing our business in, and another for burying food scrap in. All this was fun because we worked together on it. Before long, we'd cooked our hot dogs and eaten them, too. And then, as it was starting to get sunsetty out, Joe waggled his eyebrows at me and announced that he was
off to the blind for a long bit of time, so don't worry about me coming back right away, and please enjoy yourself.
Is there a name for the action of putting your head in your hands? There should be, Moritz. Because once Liz and I were left alone, it seemed like neither of us knew exactly what to say.
"Nice fire, eh?" I said anyway. "Very fiery, isn't it?"
"Actually, it's getting too hot." Liz stood up.
"Want to go down to the lake?"
"Why not?"
"I'll tell you why not, because I had been thinking while we were eating hot dogs and I was digging poop holes and climbing the ladder to the deer blind and looking out across my first ever lake, I wasn't seeing much, but the way Liz couldn't seem to look at me, and I couldn't seem to look at her either. All that time I was thinking about what Junkyard Joe had told me about this being my chance, and I was thinking that he was right, and I was going to take it. So we had only been standing awkwardly by the water, watching dragonflies flutter around and shine in the last few golden minutes of daylight as the sun was sinking just oh so perfectly down into the horizon, when I said, "People in novels like to confess love at sunset, you know?" Liz stared at me.
"Yeah, it's the same in movies. Like, seeing the sun go away makes people want to make out because they're afraid to be alone once it's dark."
Well, the dark can be scary, Liz.
She tucked her bangs behind her ear, but they fell right back into her face again.
I don't know. Maybe it's better when you can't see what you're doing, and other people can't see you, or... Anyhow, sunset confessions are totally lame, Ollie.
Yeah, totally. The worst.
The light was fading, and so was the promised chance. Or it felt like it. Maybe people confess at sunset because it feels like time is running out.
Except, well... Okay, can I say something?
She chuckled.
Since when do you ever ask that?
Well, regardless of the sunset. I mean, it's just a coincidence. I think I may kind of love you. Just so you know, not to be weird or whatever, but anyway.
I waited. Water lapped at the edges of our boots.
Well, it's not like you have other options, is it?
Well, no, that's true.
She smacked me on the arm.
Ow! Well, thanks, Captain Tact.
She spun on her heel and began clambering up the muddy shore toward the trees.
Wait, why does that matter? Why are you freaking out?
I didn't follow her, but she stopped.
What?
Why does it matter whether or not you're the only girl I know, if I think I sort of love you or whatever?
Ugh, God, I wish you'd seen a romantic comedy at some point in your life, Ollie.
No, I mean it. Explain why you hit me.
She clambered back down the shore again.
What you're saying is that you might have maybe fallen in love with anyone who happened to meet you at the power line and offer you blackberries.
That it didn't have to be me.
Yeah, well, maybe. So?
Gah!
This time she shoved me, and I fell back enough to put one foot into the cold water. I squeaked like an unmanly mouse, and she couldn't help but laugh. You would have laughed, too.
I'm sorry.
She took my hand and yanked me back out. I tried kicking the worst of the water from my boot, but it was already creeping icily between my toes.
Freaking cold! Sorry, sorry. We'll go back to the campfire. Sorry.
It was finally dark out as we stumbled into the forest hand in hand.
I still don't get why what I said was wrong, though.
Oh, shut up about it, Ollie.
She pushed a branch out of her way, and it smacked me in the shoulder when it snapped back. We came to a hollow dip in the forest floor, a circular indentation in the soil where the leaves were flattened. And suddenly we were standing in a deer hollow, and this felt more like the place to do it than any sunsetty lake.
I mean, you were the one who was there asking me about deep-sea diving, not someone else.
It was you. And now it can never be anyone else, because it already happened, and that's it. I mean, you're already it for me.
All hypothetical other girls already missed their chance with the local hermit.
You total idiot.
She let me go.
You don't know anything about other girls. I go to school with people. People way better than me, you know? I know so many people, Ollie, and I can't compete with some of them.
I know people who are beautiful. People with talents and charm and money. She smiled sadly.
People with bathtubs, okay? So for you to just say something like this is just... It's not fair to you. There are so many people you haven't met.
I'm no one.
Yeah, but I haven't met them. I met you. Basically, to me, you're everything, you know?
Without warning, she leaned forward and pushed her mouth against mine. There, when I was about 14... I had my first kiss with the girl who makes me lovesick. It was a sloppy, tooth-mashing affair that didn't do much for either of us. And I wouldn't have traded it for the entire internet or all the humidifiers in the world. I wish, Moritz, that I could stop my story here. I wish I could say that this was the last of it. I wish that I could say we had many more kisses and they weren't as terrible as that one. But we didn't. I can't face writing this now. I'm just really tired again. So why not just go ahead and tell me about Owen Abend? Or scold me some more. Whatever. Give me the snowfall. Oh.
Chapter 18. the dead mouse. Oliver, I don't want to scold you. You are my truest friend. Do you understand that? I apologize for making you think otherwise. Like you, I am trying. Tell me whatever you need to. I will not discourage you. I don't know what possessed me. Please, speak if you must. I know how valuable speech is, especially after the night at the discotheque. It was the strangest of nights. It reminded me that perhaps silence really doesn't help either of us. I will find the strength to confide in you when I can. Truly. For now, let me tell you about my meeting with Owen Arbind. I appeared in the entranceway to our cramped apartment in my carefully selected outfit. Fika raised her eyebrows. She didn't offer commentary. Father scratched the back of his head. I had never had any guests over before. Perhaps he wondered whether Fika was a nightmarish apparition. She was still wearing lace-up boots, but these had heels like knives. Stilettos, yes? I worried that she would not be as illuminating, given her change of footwear. Then she took a step forward. Those heels clicked piercing visions into my head. Shall we? She sniggered. Jingle.
We shall.
Dad stopped scratching his head. He put his hand on my shoulder as I followed her out. I waited for him to say, "Fly, fly, you fool!" But he said only, "Be kind." I asked whether we could walk there. Fika pointed wordlessly to a feet. Walking on knife point pains the soul. She led me to the train station. I swallowed hard, plunged down the stairs after her. We stood on the echoing platform.
"What's the matter with you?"
she said. "People are staring. Rude, isn't it?"
"That's because you're clicking like a mad thing on steroids."
"They can rot. But yes, I'm anxious." She elbowed me.
"About your hot date with Owen?"
I shook my head. "I don't do well with public transportation."
"Is it to do with the shrieking?"
she shrieked. The train pulled in, shrieking. "I am used to shrieking, unfortunately." The doors hissed open, expunged steamy air. How many bodies were in that car? "But I am very unbalanced."
"No kidding. I mean..."
"Then hold me, baby." She took my hand and led me into the smothering walls of the train car. It was only 3 stops to the nightclub district. The train was weaving and clacking as we rode through the city. I was disoriented. I couldn't tell where we were headed. I couldn't stand alone without falling over. This wasn't fun. Transportation of any kind all but cripples me. I can't hear properly with the background noise of motion. The constant movement jars any potential echoes into nebulousness. Everything outside the windows is invisible to me. In cars, I can sit down at least, but the trains in Kreisig are overcrowded. Seats are never guaranteed. So I stood there, queasy and unbalanced. Many of the other passengers were anticipating a fine night out. They laughed and chattered as the train rattled onward. I held Fika's hand. I could smell the smoke on her, and it did not ground me. She needed to trim her nails. Were they painted black as well? Black is the only color I am certain I have seen. That's a story for another never. We took the subway to Kreisig Central. When we climbed the stairs and reached the respite of open air, I wished I had visited before. I did not despise it, yet. Partygänger was not even close to being the only discotheque in the city. This was an entire block smattered with them. We left Gruhl Street and wandered south toward the disco itself. We passed a Marktplatz that smelled of roasted chicken, teriyaki, and incense. The air was full of noise. People eating. Tumultuous movement and shouting and music from each and every direction. A great number of people dressed exuberantly for the night out, wearing leather and spikes and all manner of strange attire. My goggles were hardly remarkable alongside those chains and mohawks. Ollie, you said walking in the woods with Liz felt wonderful, like dreamwalking? Perhaps this was what I was doing. I was light-headed from the train journey, but this made it all the more vibrant. The popping of greasy meat on spits illuminated stallholders' faces. The buzz of bulbs overhead caught moths in the night. The clip-clop of footsteps showed me the cobblestones in wondrous detail. From somewhere nearby, bass was pounding the earth, jolting everyone in and out of clarity with dizzying effect. I stopped in the street, Ollie, simply to listen to it all. Fika, ahead of me as always, stopped as well. She did not ask me what I was doing. She looked back at my face, smirked, and took my hand once more. Come on, he's waiting for you. As much as I love hip-hop concerts, I have never been enough of a dancer to visit a discotheque. The world should be grateful. But even while we waited in line, it became apparent that I had been missing out on a novel experience. The noise! I saw the world in bass tremors. Maybe if you looked this excited at school, people would want to talk to you rather than beat your face in. She couldn't be smiling. Happy dolphin waves, Oliver. I appreciate loud music. I gathered that, Brilla. Before we reached the door, two young men a few places ahead of us were ousted by a bouncer. He hoisted them up by their belt loops, dropped them off the sidewalk. He pocketed their false identification cards. Fika, I'm underage. She raised a pierced eyebrow. No shit. I hunched my shoulders, attempted to sidle from the queue. Fika grabbed me. Now, this is more like you. But... shut it! We reached the door. The bouncer, large and awkwardly haircutted as one might expect, clapped Fika on the back. Fee! Where have you been hiding? Who's your date? Mel, Mel. He's Owen's. Not mine.
Really?
He scanned me. I did not squirm. Much.
Nice goggles, kid.
He held open a palm. Thank you. I reached out to shake his hand, but he pointed to my goggles.
Thick policy in city regulation. I can't allow any guests to obscure their faces.
Oh, come on, he's too short to be a criminal. Mel cracked his knuckles much as Lentz does. His fists appeared before me in sharp detail. They were large fists.
Fair enough. Owen will have to meet us outside.
I tried slinking backward. Fika clutched my arm tighter.
Ah, come on, Mel. For me?
He shook his meaty head.
Bad enough I let you in as it is. But I'm not getting fired over a cyclops visor.
So you're acquainted with the X-Men? My second comic series, Oliver.
We have that in common. But there are no lasers in my eyes. This isn't science fiction.
Where did you find this kid?
Fine. Sorry, Brilla.
Why are...
She yanked my arm down with one hand, shoved my goggles up with the other. Mel cursed.
You didn't say he's blind?
Tragic, right? I'm not blind. Mel recovered with noteworthy speed.
Oh. Well, I guess I'm acquainted with one of Xavier's rejects now. Go on in. Owen's at the tables.
It was likely a furious shade of red, whatever red looks like. I held my chin high to reclaim my dignity, replaced my goggles. Mel snapped his fingers when I passed. I tilted my head toward the sound.
Wahnsinnig, he said.
Crazy.